Thanks, can you hear me?
Welcome to the Grateful Shows podcast, exploring the world of Grateful Dead live shows through history, philosophy, fiction, and poetic meditations. I'm your guide, host, and author, J.Y. Pod, asking you to join me as we take a step back. This edition of the Grateful Shows podcast takes us back to May 4th, 1980, a Sunday night at the Civic Center in Baltimore, Maryland. We'll do the first set this episode, and then feel free to join us next episode for the second set. Shall we go? Grateful Shows, Tour Book 1, Show Number 1. A meditation on the Baltimore Civic Center, Baltimore, Maryland, Sunday, May 4th, 1980. Phil Bombs bursting in air, Mississippi Half Step. So what's so great about the Grateful Dead anyway? It's the 80s, not the 60s, man. Counterpoint. To date, the 80s have saddled us with a lame duck president, a battered U.S. economy, the ongoing Iranian hostage crisis, and a world contemplating a Summer Olympics boycott. All things considered, the flower power, free love ethos of yesteryear looks positively inviting. And we, the weary deadheads, continue to follow the band into irrelevance like doomed lemmings. So, my friends, raise a glass. Raise it high and wide as we embark on another six-night adventure simply known as tour. We'll skip the big cities this time in favor of connecting with real Americans from the mid-Atlantic to the tip of New England, long enough to savor a slice of American pie bursting with unemployment and dissatisfaction flavor. Like a proper presidential campaign, the road to victory is paved with promises, and like a proper presidential campaign, there is little hope they will be kept. Enough is enough, man. The music. What about the music? A voice cries out. Oh yeah, that. We come to our senses just as the outro jam begins. Unfortunately, the verses and lyrics have already passed. We have officially crossed the Rio Grande O, where a tapestry of music fills the air, ripping from our hands dissertation papers outlining a utopian society. We can only watch helplessly as they fly into the void. The Grateful Dead are here to rewrite your utopian thoughts, starting with the very air we breathe. Jerry is a modern-day maestro, a professor conducting a musical masterclass, bursting with energy, fire, and sulfur. Who said the flames of hippiedom are extinguished? Notes, hopes, and heads are held high, and the show has only just begun. The relentless tiger is restless from the first song, eager for release. Welcome, Deadheads, to Baltimore, to the first East Coast tour of the 1980s, and to the third decade of Grateful Dead music. Coming up on 15 years, you know the drill. If you happen to cross paths with this fantastic circus, it is your duty to ride it deep into the night, which is exactly what we plan to do, tonight and for five more nights after this. Franklin's Tower. Jerry hits it hard. From the ashes crushed beneath lost boots in transit, we rise, resurrected into the comforting arms of a Franklin's Tower. Phil digs into a baseline to raise the hair on the most finicky of cats. Jerry works the groove over and over until we defer on bended knee, pleading, "Uncle." Our pleas do nothing but cause mild lyrical confusion. But what's a few missed words among friends? Sing hallelujah and bestow praise on the heavens above, for there is nothing better than a week of shows. From Sunday to Sunday, it's the Grateful Dead experience, spread out like an open canvas, empty pages begging to be filled with friends, emotions, and synchronicity. Brent tickles our fancy, his joyful keyboard work rippling outward. Centered, the rest of the band follows God's design, performing with a strong, workmanlike approach. As for you agnostics, feel free to subscribe to your theories about creativity and creation. Our preferred credo is roll away the dew, sometimes translated as don't obsess over matters of the heart and mind. But there's no need to turn that lyric into an invitation to philosophical or theological discourse. Let it roll over you. Let the jamming, well-played music take you away. Look around. It smiles for miles, with nary a soul wondering how this music was created, only that it was created. If you dare look closely enough, you may find that this is how happiness is created. Speaking of happy, out in the lot before the show, we pre-gamed with a group of Southern good old boys who shared glowing reviews of the tour so far, especially Hampton. But that's Hampton. The mothership is well on its way to becoming an icon among deadheads. The Baltimore Civic Center, not so much. Tonight, the mission, should you accept, is to make it so. Franklin's Tower, which clocks in at 10 minutes, shows the band is already busy doing their part. How about you? Feel like a stranger. Inhale. Take a deep breath. Hold it. And exhale to feel like a stranger. New tune alert. The sixth version ever, which will nearly double by the time we reach Maine in a week. Danceable, jamming elements cleverly blend into the crowd as Bob urges us to get on with the show. Dude, the show has already very well been gotten on with. It's hot enough and strange enough for newly formed sweat beads to fall from our skin and crystallize into salt licks at our feet so those in need can meet the recommended mineral intake. This stranger, filled with dark turns and dead ends, takes the first step towards the psychedelic realm. The musical maze expands organically as Brent's dissonant wailing deep in the darkness invokes a night that is both long and crazy. Jerry counters with his own spooky howl. Folks, we've got Halloween in May. Validation is found inside the gritty, nasty-ass playing. The Nevermore tour had to be done, and it had to start in Baltimore. An easy choice to make now, but as time passes, those youthful no-brainer decisions become harder to justify to friends and family. You don't just ditch life for a week to follow a band whose best days are long gone, despite the music begging to differ, right? Wrong. You do it. You find a way. Humans crave change, but especially incremental change within a certain level of familiarity. Everything changes. The music, its scene, and our minds, which renders comparisons moot. You've experienced growth, and so is the narrative surrounding the band, the venues, and the technology that binds them together. You used to hate onions when you were a kid, but now you can't imagine a submarine sandwich without them. Furthering the onion analogy, following the dead is like peeling back layers of consciousness to find your true self. But more often than not, you keep peeling, searching for the core, until you are left with nothing but discarded skins of time to be collected in a net and saved for a later that never arrives. The stranger peaks hard and ends, leaving us to gather our thoughts like fallen leaves on an abandoned driveway. "Billy for president," says Bob. "Our cracked equipment crew is making a couple of precise technical adjustments. This will only take a couple of seconds. I just learned that it's going to be a couple of minutes, so I thought I'd take this opportunity to tell you that in this upcoming election, where it might seem there's nothing to vote for, that's not entirely the case. Because what we have here is a presidential candidate that I'd like to, well, he's too bashful to announce his own candidacy, so I guess it'll probably do him a favor, and that a vote for Bill Kreutzmann is a vote for nature and the streets. Yes, Kreutzmann for president in 1980 is probably the winning ticket. The next ticket for sale, Althea." Wow. It's a surprisingly upbeat reading of Althea. Drummers in step, leading an imaginary parade. Balloons scatter on the wind as clowns and floats carrying distinguished town members roll past fearful children clinging to their mother's legs. Contrast this version with last fall, when Althea went as deep as one could into Garcia's mind without having to turn away due to an overwhelming feeling of empathy and despair. Tonight, Althea sashays, cloaked in cheery yet unfamiliar clothing. There is a real chance the warning signs of self-destructive excess contained within the song may go unheeded. But you know what? This is a tasty version. It combines the sugar high, the caffeine rush, and the clove cigarette kick one craves after a chicken satay, all in a neatly folded white packet. Dump the contents into your drink, stir lightly, and imbibe. What do you care? Not even tonight's "This Space is Getting Hot" line carries a strong enough warning that straddling disaster's razor edge will eventually have consequences. Open your eyes, people. What or who goes up must come down. Point taken. Garcia leads us home with an extra spicy outro. The jam digs and probes even further, delivered with laser-like precision, like an expert dermatologist removing a mole. Unless you are familiar with the ugliness that was once there, you wouldn't even notice its absence. Which is fine with most people, they just want the result. The beautiful skin, the dopamine hit of amplified music, and heightened senses working to condition the body and mind that the only cure is more. El Paso. The El Paso trots into town, or the venue, whichever you prefer. We sincerely appreciate these tales of the wicked Wild West, filled with wild, wicked Western characters. The denizens of El Paso spit in the face of the "strangers or just friends we have not met yet" crowd. However, certain protocols do apply. Handsome or ugly, a friend or foe, Please refrain from stealing other men's women. It's bound to lead to duels, bullets, dust, horses drinking from leaky, rusty buckets, tumbleweed, and tumbling dice. Not the ideal scenario for potential friendship. But what of love and Mexican women? The allure of a Latin woman has been known to entice a man or two into situations beyond their pay grade. Let the hail of bullets remind you of that. Was it worth a kiss from a dark-skinned beauty with the eyes the color of onyx? Hope so, for it will be your final vision before departing this mortal coil. Good on you, Bob, for conveying a story with such honest compassion. We, too, can taste the dusty blood in our mouths as consciousness begins its inevitable fade to black. It is our most convincing death scene yet, one that may finally get us noticed by the Academy. Easy to love you. Through no fault of his own, Brandt's apologetic tune reeks of contractual obligations. He does his best to add a page or two to the story of love, but it's like getting back a roll of film from the photo mat. You can't wait to see the pictures of your new girlfriend standing in the front yard. Was the sunlight-illuminated dress captured as you imagined? Is her face shown clearly enough to tide you over until the next time you two meet? Hell, you even snapped a few throwaway shots of your dog and mom's garden flowers to finish off the roll. As you rifle through the envelope for her picture, the majority of the contents are an afterthought. Easy to Love You falls into that camp. It is neither a blurry disaster, nor does it merit a second look. And much like the garden flowers that have long since withered and died, the song fuses and fades into other photos, forgotten, destined to a fate of neglect. Brown-eyed women. Oh, we have a story about the days when we thought would never end, when the wife said, "Won't you come to me?" We thought wrong, not for a lack of trying, though. In the end, some people choose to carry their trauma well past its due date. We vacuumed, dusted, took out the garbage, did the dishes, and even folded the laundry proficiently. At night, we read the same bedtime story over and over until we could recite it from memory. We grinned and bore it because, according to the article, framed by ads for Vantage cigarettes and Jergens lotion in the open women's magazine on the sofa, a man who does housework is irresistible. Unfortunately, the wife failed to grasp the essence of that headline. Her amorous payment for those duties included dismissive thank yous, brief pecks on the cheek, and an ever-widening gap in expectations. You were once a model couple, mother and father, husband and wife, working as a team to advance the children through the complexities of child-rearing. Despite your deep yearning for her touch and the unwavering flame within you, you patiently awaited her advances, holding out hope that giving her the space she craved would ultimately shift her feelings. But the shift never came. Rejection devolved into a distillate of bitterness and spite. Words grew harsh, the mood sour. During lunch breaks, and even as you sat working in your cubicle, a female coworker eagerly listened to your sexless marriage dilemma, offering advice she knew couldn't possibly work. Suitably frustrated, the two of you made plans for an after-work meetup that promised temptation and potential regret. Although wrong, the die was cast. Upon awakening that fateful morning, you offered your wife a final chance at redemption. Just before leaving the house, you leaned in for a kiss. She instinctively turned her head in annoyance. "Don't you have to go?" You walked out the door with your relationship on life support, gasping for air as the sun cast weak columns of light through the trees, Jerry singing directly to your core. "And it looks like the old man's getting old. If you only knew, my friend, if you only fucking knew." All over now. Unsurprisingly, the sign on the door leading to the next tune reads, "Welcome to the Grateful Dead Mind Reading Association." We specialize in infiltrating minds to align with not only your happiest moments, but also your deepest fears and regrets. Case in point, this Bob musical selection proves that not every dissolution of a relationship has to be the sad story recounted above. It can be downright liberating, especially when you finally recognize her rejection was a byproduct of the fun she was having behind your back. But the more Bob sings, the angrier you get. "Every man in town!" Probably, you think, as a reel of unknown men's faces scrolls before your eyes. If cartoon smoke could pour from your ears, you'd fumigate the whole damn floor. Brandt's generic keyboard solo reminds you that your situation isn't even unique. Women have been men's torment since time immemorial. Everyone in the band gets a musical turn. Just listen to Jerry. He hits it big and loud. Wow, what has he been through? The real payoff happens as he orders Tiger to elucidate in his stead with the following message found inside the lucid yet searing solo. "Bad relationships happen. I am not perfect. In fact, my imperfections make me who I am, and no woman can strip that from me. That is absolutely correct. As a man, I have the right to purchase a gun. As a licensed firearms holder, I will exercise that right. I will pick up a 38 caliber gun and shortly afterward, a box of ammunition. I won't need the whole box, though. A couple to the head should do the trick. I drive home with renewed confidence, the gun plainly in view on the passenger seat, excess ammunition stored in the glove box. I perform the correct turn signals, drive within the speed limit, and wave a fellow male driver onto the main road. It's nothing but proper manners and smiles for my fellow menfolk. I pull up to the house, relieved that the lights are on. They will remain on even after the task is finished. Using our home telephone, I will call 911 and return to my car, leaving the receiver on the table, the call still engaged. By the time the police arrive, it'll be too late for both my family and me. My unlocked car is parked at a gas station just outside of town. If anyone noticed the blood-spattered window, they haven't reported it yet. Too bad. It was a solid version of All Over Now, well worth the inspiration. Don't ease me in. Her man may be locked up, but he sure as hell ain't cheating. For her part, showing up loaded with coffee, tea, and everything but the jailhouse key is a solid effort. And you know that dude in jail is getting it more than we are. Indeed, if more women modeled themselves after our heroine in Don't Ease, we might have prevented that murder-suicide in an all-American town. Wait. This absolutely cannot be the end of the set. And with nary a whiff of a psychedelic vibe in order to place the songs within the larger context of the macrocosm? These guys are just singing and playing like they don't have a care in the world. And what about us? We waited the whole set for some sort of a launching point, and you guys are just going to end it like this? The band throws us a fortune cookie, which we open immediately, discarding the wrapper and stale cookie. Those who idly watch the world pass by are forced to eat the dessert of regret. Whatever. The back of these wise words also had an advertisement for learning Chinese, a list of lucky numbers, and a recipe for chicken chop suey. None of this can window dress the fact that Don't Ease is still a minion in the pantheon of Grateful Dead songs and a terrible way to end the set. Apologies for the flippant attitude, but show me a Don't Ease fan and I'll raise you a day job. Promised Land. Saved by the Bob. Powered by a hefty Chuck Berry rock and roll engine, we burn across this wonderful country of ours, leaving a trail of memories in our wake. It rocks and it definitely rolls. A superior choice to that flaccid Jerry offering. And you can forget about chop suey as well. We prefer General Chow's chicken anyway. Promised Land started out in a fairly standard way, but as soon as the boys proclaimed, "Poor boys on the line," they flipped the switch. Hyperspace, interstellar oblivion. A date with the maker surely arrives. A shred fest of the highest order. What the hell has gotten into these guys? Pent-up energy thrust into a compressed space, poised to expand and blow us away. It goes and goes and goes some more until bam! Welcome to the end of the rainbow, the golden state of a Grateful Dead show, where a delicious, sloppy heap of goodness awaits. Take a hit and pass it on. When the music is this good, sharing is caring. The Dead reach deep to find that extra gear, as if they could read the frustration in the room. Now that is called professionalism. In fact, we may even say that all is forgiven. Nice first set, boys. It's finally time to collectively exhale. Whew! We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back, so everybody hang loose. So that does it for the first set. Thank you so much for choosing to spend time with us here at the Grateful Shows podcast. Be sure to tune in for the second set right here on Grateful Shows. See you next set. If this reading of Grateful Shows has given you something to sit with, I'd be glad to have you along for the rest of the ride. You can listen on whatever platform suits you best. The link is in the show notes. And if you'd like to go deeper, the written work behind these readings will be available as a complete tour book upon finishing the tour. Again, the link is below. A short note on Podchaser would mean a great deal at this early stage of the show's life. And if you'd like to receive occasional communication about the writing and what's coming next, the newsletter sign-up is in the show notes too. Thank you so much for listening.